So what are the 21 skills of spiritual intelligence as I define them? The 21 skills fall into four quadrants that directly and intentionally parallel both David Goleman, Richard Boyatzit's work and bear connection to Ken Wilber's quadrants, as explained above. You can think of these four quadrants of spiritual intelligence inventory as being a vertical stack on top of the EQ 18 skills in quadrants. It is possible to create clear operational definitions of spirituality and spiritual intelligence. Furthermore, we can define and assess the specific skills and the levels of skill development for the 21 skills of spiritual intelligence. This should lead to wonderful opportunities to use the spiritual intelligence assessment for helping people, one, assess and periodically reassess their current skill development levels, two, plan for their own development in a way that allows them to utilize the abundant options in the world, including their existing faith tradition or the tools from psychology, spirituality, or personal growth, and three, find ways to talk about these skills and areas of ultimate concern with people of any faith, atheists and agnostics. Furthermore, the SQI is clearly compatible with and supportive of integral theory. The 21 skills are a concrete way of defining spiritual intelligence, meaning the criteria for an intelligence in supporting the conveyor belt of adult development. And that's one of the things that I think is so important about it is how it can directly support the conveyor belt.
That's my passion. I know it is yours.
Doesn't it just make so much sense that as people go through levels of development, they're going to have, you know, different levels of understanding of spirituality?
Absolutely. And this is the tool I wish I had had.
Exactly.
In many ways, we teach what we need to learn, and
right.
I have needed to learn all of this to become the person I wanted to be. Wished that I had found emotional intelligence early in my career when I desperately needed it, and very much wished that someone else had done this so I could just go buy it instead of having to build it. But building it has been a blast, so I'm not complaining.
It's so important that this particularly relates to spiritual intelligence as a multiple intelligence or as developing, unfolding, evolving structures of consciousness. And one of the reasons is that that is where the conveyor belt works, is through the different worldviews of spirituality. So that, again, just to put it crudely, as people develop through their levels of maturity and levels of complexity, they go from archaic to magic to mythic to rational to pluralistic to integral. And religion, of really all of the disciplines, is the one that can really sort of most easily hold people's hands and walk them through these levels, because everybody's born at square one. Everybody's born with archaic and magic, you know, worldviews. And, of course, their religion or spirituality will reflect that level or perspective. And then they, you know, move into mythic, and then starting adolescence, they have a chance to move into rational, which also, I mean, doesn't just mean sort of abstract and dry. It actually means filling it out and moving from ethnocentric, which is mythic, to world-centric, to treating all people fair, regardless of race, color, sex, or creed, which is a huge developmental unfolding. You know, and it's absolutely mandatory for religions. Because otherwise, they, you know, remain at ethnocentric mythic level and believe that if you don't adopt their religion, you really are bound for hell. And they, you know, bless their hearts, they really mean it.
They do. And, you know, from a developmental standpoint, we externalize those punishments, and that's sort of our conscience is on the external until we internalize it.
Right.
Then letting it go, you know, like you've outgrown that structure now, release it.
Right. And all of that is so important, and all of that is just so fundamentally lacking in the world today. You know, what we really need is leaders of the world's religions to just, you know, formally announce that other religions can offer a similar salvation. And that's what Vatican II actually managed to sort of croak that out. and then the next two popes have done everything they can
to backpedal.
back It's just horrifying.
I was raised Roman Catholic. I have a lot of affection for the church, and I also find some of this just frustrating.
Well, it's only, you know, things like a woman becoming a priest is an equivalent sin as pederasty. That's a recent announcement from our Pope. It's just horrifying. And so predictably amber, you know, mythic literal, ethnocentric, fundamentalist. It's just horrifying. But now I wanted to just go through some of the responses in a sample report on the spiritual intelligence assessment, or the SQI, because I think they're very, very good and very telling of the type of things that you'll run into as you look at the 21 skills that you have found most to be involved with spiritual intelligence.
Fantastic. Pick your first and let's roll.
Excellent. Begins with a short explanation. Spiritual intelligence is defined as the ability to act with wisdom and compassion while maintaining inner and outer peace, equanimity, regardless of the circumstances. Spiritual intelligence exists as potential in each of us, but like any intelligence, it must be developed. Developed intelligences can be demonstrated as skills or competences. The Deep Change Spiritual Intelligence Assessment measures 21 skills that we believe combine to create the ability to be wise and compassionate in our behaviors while maintaining inner and outer peace, even under great stress. These skills are broken into four quadrants, and so we will begin with quadrant one. And what I'm going to do is just read the skill for two of them and read the responses for three of them.
Okay.
So quadrant one, higher self / ego self awareness scores. There are five skills in quadrant one, and each of those can be scored from 0 to 5. Skill one, awareness of one's own worldview. And the sample test person scores at level 3 here, on which the comment is, you can explain your own worldview to others. You understand that other people's worldviews can be different from yours, but are not necessarily wrong. You are somewhat sure that everyone has a worldview and that every worldview is incomplete or limited. Next step, and here you always give suggestions on where to head given their present stage of development. So next step, this is an area for you to think more deeply about so that you may solidify this skill level before moving forward. Consider traveling to another country to see life through the eyes of another culture, or spend a significant quantity of time with people from a different religion or culture. As you learn about the belief systems of others, you will be learning about yourself. Over time, you may find a compassionate realization that we are all strongly shaped by our experiences, including our upbringing, to believe what we believe. The worldviews that we have are obviously, you know, terribly important and do develop in very profound ways. One of the things that a person can do for studying the awareness of their own worldviews and others is to actually study developmental models, because they open a person to, you know, a whole world of development in their different skills and intelligences. And research shows that when a person studies a developmental model, they increase their rate of development.
Right, it becomes psychoactive, I think is the phrase.
It's psychoactive. You read about those things, and off you go.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so wonderful. And I think, you know, studying AQUIL, studying integral theory, is a fantastic way to become aware of your own biases in so many areas. You know, what quadrant do you preference?
Right.
All of those things, you know.
So right.
These models are powerful tools for helping people develop awareness of their own perspective and to gain a wider perspective.
Yeah, exactly. And then they both grow up and they wake up. Results are just really altogether profound. Skill two is awareness of personal life purpose, mission, or vision. I believe it's fairly straightforward. And then skill three, awareness of personal values hierarchy. Here you say, you understand the importance of having personal values, and you can list your own. You know what matters to you. This is a great foundation for healthy decision-making. Next step, write your list down and look at it. spend some time considering whether your values are aligned with the highest truth you understand and with compassion for all living things. Listening to your higher self, inner wisdom, may help you identify your most important core values. Edit the list if you get a better idea about what matters to you. Once you feel your list is aligned with your highest self and they reflect a compassion for yourself and all living beings, then begin evaluating your daily actions and decisions in light of your values. What percentage of the time are you walking your talk? How can you move closer to 100%? And that's really the question, in a sense. I mean, how do I grow? How do I mature? How do I expand? How do I increase my spiritual intelligence?
Do I know what it is that is my North Pole? And then am I self-reflecting, which is, this is our self-reflection quadrant, on how am I doing?
Right.
And living from that.
And a constant sort of checklist on that is a monitor, in a sense, on your own conveyor belt. How well are we doing? And then skill 4, complexity of inner thought process. Of course, greater development brings greater complexity of thought. And skill 5, awareness of ego self and higher self. And the sample person scores at level 2 here, on which you comment. You are aware of some or most of the impacts that your upbringing, family, and culture had on the development of your personality and beliefs. You are aware that you have an occasional inner debate between two basic inner voices. You are somewhat aware that the desires of your ego and of your higher self or inner wisdom are different. Next step. Notice that ego speaks from anger or fear. Sometimes when our ego gets strongly agitated, it can feel like we are not in control of our own behavior. Notice when your ego side gets activated. Notice what happens in your body. Does your pulse rise? Do you clench your teeth or fists? Do muscles tighten? Does your stomach tense? Your body can be your ally in becoming more aware of ego. You may notice that certain people or certain types of situations cause the ego to get agitated. Become very aware of patterns so you can finish this sentence. My ego tends to get upset when. Think back over your life. How is this upsetness related to other situations from your childhood or early adulthood? Learn to have a conversation with yourself when your ego is upset, or better yet, in a quiet moment later on. Ask your ego self, what are you afraid of? What are you angry about? What would you like me to do about this situation? This dialogue helps you to create a little bit of distance through awareness so that you are observing your ego self rather than just automatically acting based on its prompting. Write down the answers you get from ego. Then ask yourself, what might be a more wise and compassionate response to this situation? Or more simply, what would love do? Breathe deeply to calm your body and then ask the question again. Listen for the inner wisdom that arises from higher self. Notice the differences in how each part of ourselves interprets a situation. These are all such fundamental questions and skills when coming and relating to these two fundamentally different selves that we have. One self, higher self, plugged directly into the divine, and the other self, the observed or manifest self, plugged directly into the relative realm, the manifest realm. And learning to spot the difference between those two is absolutely crucial.
Yes, and this skill shows up in the first quadrant as an awareness skill and then shows up in the third quadrant as a behavior. Do you behave from your higher self? So
right.
Do you listen for it? And then do you learn to behave from it? Because if you can't do that, you're not going to get to the outcome quadrant.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, we can notice these two selves in the simple fact that when I'm aware of myself, there's one self or pure witness that is aware, the observing self, and one self or small self or ego self that we are aware of. And the true self or higher self is the pure witness, a pure seer, not anything that can be seen.
Mm-hmm.
And this can lead to those exercises such as repeating, I have sensations, but I'm not those sensations. I have feelings, but I'm not those feelings. I have thoughts, but I'm not those thoughts. I have a body, but I'm not that body. I have a mind, but I'm not that mind. I am the pure self that is aware of the mind, aware of the body, aware of the ego, aware of thoughts, aware of feelings and such. I'm pure, unqualifiable awareness as such, the pure witness, the true self. And awakening to that is awakening to the divine as well. And so, you know, having that in here, you know, is wonderful. And, you know, I think really will help put the person on the right track to, you know, making that fundamental distinction.
I agree.
Very cool. Then we move to quadrant two, which is about universal awareness. And there are six skills in quadrant two. And again, they're scored from 0 to 5. Skill six is feeling interconnected with all life. And the sample person scores at level 0 here, upon which you comment. You either frequently try to think about something else when you see someone grieving, or feel that you can only rarely keep an open heart when someone is in pain. Next step. Consider that this is an understandable defense to feeling the pain of others. Someone else's pain is tempting to hide from, since we may feel that we can't make it better. We also tend to believe that we can only handle so much suffering, and we already have enough in our own lives. So we set up walls to connecting with other people's feelings. So the underlying motive is fear that we cannot handle the pain or grief of another person. We may even fear our own emotions and try to repress them. Fear is an emotion of our ego self, and a fear is usually based on a false belief. I once saw somebody define fear, F-E-A-R, as false evidence of praise is real.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Grief in and of itself is just an emotion. Emotions can arise and dissipate if we do not resist them or cling to them. Compassionate connection with ourselves and with other humans means that we have the courage to look at our emotions and theirs. Even if we cannot fix things, we can hold someone's hand, express our care for them, and just be there. We can also pray for those who suffer. You need the strength of your own emotional self-awareness first. Then you can develop strength to be present to the pain of others. A good first step to increase your emotional self-awareness is to work on a good emotional vocabulary. Create a list of feelings, or take the list from CPI website, and each day write in a journal the emotions you felt during the day. Building your emotional self-awareness will help you have compassion for yourself. You will realize that emotions arise and then leave. You can learn how to handle them. If you have concerns about being able to handle your own feelings, we strongly encourage you to do this emotional self-awareness work with a trained therapist. And this is such an important way to connect and help a person understand their capacity to be interconnected with all life. Is start with your relation to being able to be related to pain and not just, you know, let's have a fun nature walk.
Right.
But what do we do with people that are suffering? And one of the reasons we don't feel more of an interconnection with all life is we have a hard time with suffering.
Yes, and we will spiritual bypass our way around it at any opportunity.
Right. And I think that's a beautiful insight. And, you know, expressed really well here, something that is just terribly important towards moving towards one of the truly ultimate goals of spirituality and certainly mystical spirituality, and that is feeling interconnected with all life. Skill seven, awareness of the worldviews of others, and the sample person scores level 0, you comment, you may have difficulty listening to other people's points of view. This may limit your effectiveness in your work and your ability to build trusting, open relationships. The next step, consider taking a debate class where you will have to argue both sides of a point. This can help you see that in most arguments, each side has a legitimate point. You might also want to discuss with a coach or counselor how to listen to others so that you really understand their point of view. And this drives really right to the heart of being able to take the perspective of others, put yourself in the shoes of others.
Yes, and I grew up as an expatriate child, so I was thrown into this very early, and I've come to appreciate what a tremendous gift that was.
Right.
To just automatically know that the American point of view is not the only point of view.
Yes, something that American culture is, you know, completely bereft of that understanding.
You're quite parochial, but even to Americans, obviously we have two different perspectives. So the humility to drop that boundary and to see the truth of the other is—it's just such a profound, and it becomes very positively self-reinforcing, because I realize how limited my own perspective was, and therefore how limited my choices and decisions were.
Right.
And once you can get people turned on to this skill, it becomes really exciting.
Right. And there's a certain sense too in which it's really a transformer of development. It's just such a crucially central drive and capacity and skill, this capacity of perspective taking, and seeing the world, through another person's eyes. And it takes a huge leap, in the so-called leap from first tier to second tier, or from what Maslow called deficiency needs to being needs. Because all of the first-tier worldviews think that their values and their values alone are real. And then when you get to second-tier, one of the defining characteristics is that it thinks all of the previous worldviews are important, have a right to exist, and are somehow foundational in the world. And, of course, they are. They're the actual steps that the individual has climbed, the actual tools that are incorporated in the mind, in terms of how to interpret and see the world.
You learn calculus, you don't start ridiculing algebra.
Exactly. And molecules don't really ridicule atoms.
Right.
So it's just an absolutely crucial area of awareness, and so it's rightly given emphasis here. Skill 8, breadth of time awareness. You point out this helps us see that we are all in process of change. And skill 9, awareness of the limitations of human perception. And among other things, that awareness helps you to use your intuition to supplement your 5 physical senses. Mm-hmm. Skill 10, awareness of spiritual principles. Quote, spiritual principles are founded on a belief in love, forgiveness, the value of an ethical life, and an awareness that we are profoundly interconnected, and a belief that this life has meaning. Beautifully stated. And skill 11, experience with a mystical peak or unitive experiences, and the sample person scores level 2. And, of course, these states of consciousness that we were talking about. Your comment, you frequently experience a sense of timelessness when you are totally immersed in what you are doing. These moments of flow are when your being and your doing are merged. You have rarely or occasionally had peak experiences that make you feel lighter, happier, and more connected. These moments occur spontaneously. Next step, notice when you have a peak experience. Do these happen in any pattern? For example, for many people, these are inspired by nature, by art, or by being totally present to the joy of a child. Increase your exposure to things which trigger your peak experiences. Consider spiritual practices from the mystical side of your faith tradition if you would like to increase the frequency of these moments of non-dual or unity consciousness. I and the universe are one. And that's exactly right. That's particularly what the meditative side of the faith traditions do. A lot of their traditions themselves divide their teachings between so-called exoteric and so-called esoteric, outer or inner, and an important distinction, the outer being just sort of the story, the narrative about how we're here, why we're here, what ultimate reality is, and the esoteric is a direct experience of that ultimate reality.
Right. Being raised Roman Catholic, although it had a beautiful esoteric tradition, I was really only exposed to the exoteric, the dogma and the rituals, you know, on Friday for confession and on Sunday morning for Mass. That's how you get to heaven.
You know, it's just horrid. I mean, because the Christian faith really began in just a flurry of spiritual experiences. The first gathering of the church is supposedly the Pentecost, and there are a bunch of Christians sitting around, and all of a sudden they all have, you know, what we would perhaps refer to as a subtle realm experience of light and fire landing on their head. And all of them have these flames, you know, over their head, and it's just, you know, a complete altered mystical state. And that's the beginning of the church, which
hides all that.
I mean, it just, you know, by the third century and into the fourth, the mystical experience side is just, you know, pushed aside completely and replaced with really a kind of legalistic belief.
Well, understandable. Mystics get direct access to God, and that's a really scary thing if you're the Pope.
Doesn't work, does it?
It doesn't work well.
It's just the same reason the oil companies don't like solar energy. It goes, solar energy has a nasty habit of going straight to you and bypassing them. So it just doesn't work. And, of course, there are just an enormous number of kinds of mystical experiences. There's nature mysticism and deity mysticism and formless mysticism and non-dual mysticism. And all of them could be important. And, you know, the church managed to sort of suppress all of them. And the worst, I think, really is kicking Christ upstairs and saying, okay, one person could have an experience of unity with God, but only that one person. And nobody else is allowed to have that. I mean, in direct contradiction to what Christ himself unmistakably said when talking to Abba, which is a familiar term that he used when he talked to God.
It's like daddy.
It means daddy. That they all may be one, as you and I are one, and we shall be one with all of them. And I mean, that's the essential basic end state of the Christian.
Right.
You know, that unitive nature is just absolutely unmistakable. And yet that, what was kicked upstairs. And so all of the mystics, even though they still remained a very strong current, they had to watch their wording really, really carefully. They step over the line, and they are anathema.
Well, denominations like mine are still considered pretty heretical by more traditional, you know, because they basically teach Jesus as the older brother, the great example, not the great exception.
Yeah.
And that the commandment was to be like him, to discover
right.
Christ's nature and live from that Christ nature. Much like Buddha nature, you know, what is your fully embodied Christ self?
Exactly. And, of course, that makes complete sense with what Christ himself said and what St. Paul even said, you know, that they all may be one. And so it just kind of slowly gets more and more and more heretical. St. Teresa walks the line very carefully. She gets right up to the seventh mansion, where she and Christ are, you know, getting married, and things are getting really, really close here. And then she says, and then you can't put in words what happens next. So,
right.
You know, sort of sage herself, as her own teacher, St. John of the Cross, did, even though there's some very profound teachings and practices there that will clearly take you to a unitive state. Meister Eckhart, on the other hand, interestingly, he wasn't condemned, but his theses were condemned. So apparently, he's in heaven for eternity, and his ideas are in hell.
I love that. I had never heard that before.
That can't be a happy feeling for him. He cannot be in a happy state.
Oh, that is such the bureaucrat's resolution to a problem.
That's unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
So, quadrant three, which is a very important quadrant, it's capital S self / small s self, mastery scores. So here, of course, we're talking in really significant ways about the higher self,
yeah.
The observing self, the transcendental self, spiritual self, and the small self, the self-contraction, the false self. There are five skills in quadrant three. Skill 12, demonstrating commitment to personal spiritual growth, straightforward. Skill 13, keeping higher self spirit in the driver's seat. This, of course, is very important. The sample test person scores at level 2. You know that anger does not get you the best results. You are mostly aware of when your ego self has been activated and you are acting based on fear or anger. You want to find a better way to handle things. Next step, through your faith tradition, therapy, coaching, or through a class, learn the steps to shift from ego to higher self, from anger or fear to love and forgiveness. Study what forgiveness really means. It is not about forgetting the wrongs done to you. And work on forgiving anyone you still bear anger towards. Forgiveness is such a crucial component of a mature spiritual awareness. To you, what does it really mean?
Forgiveness is a shift in perspective. So I look at an event that happened, and on an objective basis, if I were to tell you the facts of the case, you know, any normal collection of humans would go, he done you wrong, girl. But when I shift perspective, I see that there's more than one thing going on, and there may be a dozen things going on.
Right.
You know, on one level, I am getting to experience the way that I may have treated other people.
Right.
So that's an empathy-building, compassion-building activity.
Right.
One could say it's karmic payback for having done that before. It could be a profound lesson, like how many times you're going to keep trying to, you know, like the woman who marries her sixth alcoholic husband or whatever.
Right.
You know, like how many times you're going to have to live with this selection you keep making. You
right.
are the one who made the choice that created that situation. Own
right.
it. You know, and so the more different perspectives you take, and then you say, well, from his perspective, how did he see that situation? And my basic point is that from his perspective, his behavior made sense. So
right.
if I can't find the place from within inside him that behavior made sense, then I haven't tried hard enough.
Right.
Yet. So something in his biology, his personal history, and all the things that I did to him resulted in his behavior towards me.
Right.
And if you get really good at this is sort of the ultimate test for me, is like, can I get my head inside of a Hitler or an Osama bin Laden
right.
and see that from their perspective what they were doing was the right choice for them?
Right.
It doesn't mean I wouldn't assassinate them if I had the chance.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah. It's an ability, a flexibility of mind.
Right.
To see from within their perspective and to see from an evolutionary perspective. I think
right.
being confronted by the Osama bin Ladens of the world is a tremendous evolutionary gift to us as a collective.
Right.
It's reflecting our shadow back to us.
Right.
And so if I can hold all of those perspectives, then I can say, well, in the relative world, I don't want to ever have lunch with you again. but in the absolute, thank you so much for showing up in my life.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's from, you know, the point of view of one taste. There's a fundamental oneness connecting all of these perceptions mm-hmm. and all of these perspectives. And so being able to actually see, you know, through the other person's eyes in a variety of ways as a fourth person or even a fifth person perspective. And that, you know, is clearly a highly evolved state. And you can practice that. I mean, this is one of the skills that helps develop spiritual intelligence maturity as a multiple intelligence.
Absolutely.
You know?
It's one of the key things we practice in workshops.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think it's one of the things, I don't want to sort of enormously endorse this, but one of the good things about the Course in Miracles mm-hmm. is that the main path that it taught was forgiveness. And it was a very powerful technique for that reason
mm-hmm.
and really helped you get into a state of forgiveness and then to recognize that state of forgiveness is a state of oneness as well. You know, so that becomes a very, very powerful test of where you actually are on the good old oneness scale.
Yes, I agree. And I like the workbook on the Course in Miracles, especially the first part of the workbook.
Exactly.
I find the text a little burdensome, and I do find people can go off the deep end with the Course in Miracles content.
Yeah.
But there is some really nice perspective-shifting exercises in that workbook.
There is indeed. And I actually had the offhand opportunity to get to know William Thetford, the so-called co-scribe of the course, really quite well. Judith Scutch, who published the course, brought pretty much everybody who was involved with it and got them out to Marin County one way or another. And Francis Vaughn and Roger Walsh happened to already be living there. And so there was Judith Scutch, and then there was William Thetford. And the actual co-scribe of the course was there briefly, and then she died, but the publishers were there and so on. And I was actually given a grant to help move me from Cambridge out to Marin County. And so I did that and got to know all of them fairly well. And it was a very interesting experience. The direct scribe, the woman who actually heard the inner voice, she and Bill Thetford were co-editors of the Journal of Abnormal Psychology.
Oh, how fantastic.
And she's riding home in the subway one day and starts to hear this inner voice. It says, "This is A Course in Miracles. Please take notes." She gets home and she calls Bill and she says, "Okay, I have finally lost it. I'm psychotic. I'm hallucinating." And he said, "Well, wait, is the voice coming from inside your head or is it coming from outside?" And she said, "Oh, well, it's coming from inside." And he said, "Well, as you know, psychotic voices come from outside. People will actually look up in the corner of a room or look, you know, talk next to them or something like that. They actually hear voices as real people outside of them. They don't hear it as inner voices." So he says, "Why don't you write down what it says?" And so she wrote down what it said, which is the opening of the course. It's a very beautiful statement about this is A Course in Miracles. It's a required course. The opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is fear.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really beautiful. And so she goes in the next day. They go in an hour early and pull the blinds to their office. And on a typewriter that Bill got, paid for by the CIA, a long story there, she would, you know, repeat what she had heard the previous day, and he would type it. And she would often just be writing the stuff down, you know, not really understanding what she was writing, and she'd get a phone call, automatically stop, take the phone call. Phone call's over. She'd automatically go back to right in the middle of the sentence where she left off and continue writing. And she wouldn't really know what she scribed until the next day when she read it to Bill. And she maintained that she didn't believe any of it.
Wow.
Yeah, and defined herself as a militant atheist Jew.
Amazing.
Of course, the voice in the course identifies itself as Jesus Christ. Interestingly, the voice actually says things like, "You, Bill," or "You," I'm blocking her name for some reason. Say
I can't
her first
think
name.
Of it at this moment either.
Yeah. Say it was Mary. "You, Bill, should behave in this way, and you, Mary, should do this." And it was in response to direct conflicts that they were having in the Department of Psychology. And
I remember that.
Yeah. And so it had to be edited into a universalistic statement that, mm-hmm. you know, "You should treat your brother this way," and you said, et cetera. And then took off and sparked an entire decade of some of the truly most horrendously channeled garbage you can imagine. And everybody was channeling, you know, Chief Brave Eagle from Alpha Centauri.
Right.
And it just horrid stuff, absolutely horrid stuff. Whereas this was actually fairly sophisticated, and she had maintained that she was an atheist her entire life, and one of the things that I was asked to do when I got out there was to kind of do a little brief biography, and they had all of the sources there, and I went back, and I found stuff that was as early as 4 years old, she would sing I have to know if God exists. Mm. If he would just show me a miracle, then I would know.
Mm.
And she was brought up by theosophical mm-hmm. parents who are highly involved in the theosophical movement. And she was just drenched in all of that stuff from very, very early childhood. And it clearly all came back.
She was channeling.
And she was channeling. So all of that is very fascinating and, you know, raises endless questions. But it turned out to have some parts, I think exactly the parts that you described,
mm-hmm.
that were really quite beautiful in their own way.
Mm-hmm. I love the prelude and I love the beginning of the workbook. So that's what I usually recommend to people.
Exactly. Skill 14, mm-hmm. aligning purpose and values with compassion and wisdom. Of course, that's important, sort of aligning small self with true self.
Mm-hmm.
Skill 15, sustaining faith even during dark nights of the soul or tough times. The SAFL person scores at level 2. You comment. You have confidence in a higher power source, not just as a matter of belief, but also as a matter of experience, based on your relationship with your higher power. You are able to sustain an attitude of gratitude in most circumstances. Next step, continue to strengthen your relationship with your higher power so that it can sustain you even when you are angry or grieving or distressed. Relationships are strengthened through a commitment of time and energy. How much time do you spend each day focused on your relationship with your higher power? And that is a really important question and, you know, puts it directly to the person. You know, you have access to this ultimate divine within your own awareness, within your own interior. How much time do you spend in relationship with that? How much time do you spend, you know, even looking for that? How much time do you spend experiencing that?
We often say, you know, I love my spouse or I love my children, but if you look at your calendar, like how much time do you spend with the people you claim to love? And I think it's the same thing if we're aspiring to be in alignment with our higher self in connection with Source.
Right.
What are we doing? You know, are we actually living from that or is that just an empty desire?
Exactly. Given the fact that the ultimate divine is an ever-present reality that we can draw on endlessly, it's just really kind of insane not to develop a relationship with that self or spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that is clearly part of spiritual intelligence. And so clearly an important part of the assessment. And, you know, really telling, just very, very telling. And skill 16 relates to just what we were saying, seeking guidance from universal consciousness, higher power, higher self. So ask for higher power for help is an important part of that skill.
And triggers an allergy for people who don't like to ask.
Yeah.
I have to know. I have to decide. Well, which voice is speaking?
Yeah.
May I speak to the voice of your controller, please?
Yeah. That is often the first question on the way towards deeper questions. And then finally, quadrant 4, social mastery, spiritual presence. And you point out this is the hardest group of skills to get high scores in, since it is the quadrant which develops last and is dependent upon the other three quadrants. So please be patient with yourself if your scores in this quadrant are lower than the other quadrants. There are 5 skills in quadrant 4. Skill 17. Being a wise and effective teacher of spiritual principles. Skill 18, consulting a wise and effective change agent.
Mm-hmm.
And the SAFL person scores level 0, to which you comment, change is an inevitable part of all our lives. A change agent is someone who helps groups or individuals navigate through work or personal changes in a way that results in good solutions. Being an effective change agent requires bringing a lot of different skills together, compassion for people's feelings, even if you would not react the same way, an ability to stay in the process rather than jumping to a quick fix, seeking win-win solutions, seeking to get to the real root problem rather than being distracted just by the surface presenting problem, the best change agents operate in an egoless way, truly seeking the wisdom of the group. In a business setting, you often need training in how to be an effective facilitator, tools to help groups dig deeply into root causes, how to solicit input from all stakeholders, and how to pilot new ideas. This is certainly something that you're familiar with.
Yes.
Not everyone enjoys or needs to play this role. This is an important point. If you choose not to pursue this skill, consider being the best team member you can by keeping higher self in charge. And that's a beautiful insight, that the higher self can surrender its desire to be in control and can be a good team player. And being a good team player doesn't mean you're at a lower level. It can express a very high level of spiritual intelligence.
Absolutely.
And that's a wonderful point. And I think this whole section is put very well and very clearly. And it is important, you know, being willing to consult somebody else is, you know, runs into the same issue as, may I speak to the controlling?
Right.
So, and I know at Integral Institute, we offer integral coaching. Most people respond saying, yes, they're willing to be a coach. Who should I coach?
Mm-hmm.
When we're offering getting coached.
Right.
And the people just assume that they already know everything there is to know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're ready to be a coach. They don't need coaching. And we just kind of scratch our heads and go, oh, my God, what is this? So, yes, be willing to ask for help. It won't kill you. It might actually learn something.
Exactly.
Skill 19, making compassionate and wise decisions. And the sample person scores level 1. You are compassionate toward yourself when you make mistakes. You understand that being imperfect is part of being human. Next step, develop the same compassion towards others who might be behind you on the spiritual path or doing things you do not agree with. Have the humility to know that you cannot know what is right and best for another person. Even if they are making a mistake, it might be the perfect mistake for them to make for their own growth. There are many paths available to reach our common goals. Have compassion and understanding for their journey, and let it be theirs. Offer non-judging help when asked for it, but do not push. Pushing comes from ego, and it creates an ego counter-reaction, defense in the other person. Give freely and with love, and let spirit do the rest. It's really well put, and again, getting ego out of the way, and higher self in charge.
This gets triggered a lot for people who have put a lot of time into their spiritual path because they really believe that they do know what's right for the other person.
Right. It's one of the constant shadow issues of people working with integral approaches. Simply because integral is so inclusive and so sort of all-embracing, you can get the wrong assumption that therefore you know everything there is to know, and that your opinion is going to be right in every arena.
Right.
And the conclusion is really just the opposite, that what we learned is that there are enormous number of perspectives, you know, and different intelligences that are operative, and different states that are operative, and different levels that are operative, and different types that are operative. And there's no way anybody can master all of that. We can simply be aware of it and then, you know, let go, open up. Let spirit come through and act through this expanded awareness that we have because we have a larger framework.
Absolutely, and have the humility to know that you can never know what's right for someone else. And
right.
That lesson has come back to me enough times and smacked me in the face that I try hard now to pay attention to it.
It is, in a certain way, it is kind of that, you know, counterintuitive,
mm-hmm.
because it, you know, it would seem that the more I develop, the more I'm going to know the correct answer to everything. And, of course, what it means is that I have increased my perspectives and I am going to be more likely to have some adequate suggestions for the situation. But it doesn't mean that I always have the right one.
That's correct. And sometimes people need to make mistakes. That is the biggest gift I think sometimes we can give our children, is to let them make the mistakes that they need to make so that they own the learning.
Exactly. The mistake is actually misnamed. It's an experiment. You know, every experiment, whether it gives, you know, positive or negative results, you learn something.
To passionately embrace their life, they may need to have experimented in ways that backfired.
Right.
So that they can say, now I'm passionately committed to whatever.
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. Skill 20, being a calming, healing presence. The sample person scores level 3. You are able to calm others and frequently feel inner calmness yourself. But you sometimes feel hopeless when you can't relieve someone else's suffering. This is understandable since you care about people and want to be able to make things better. Next step, consider that none of us can remove all the unpleasantness from life. You cannot keep sad things from happening, nor can you force others to take a positive attitude towards their experience. This may be the perfect experience for them at this time. Strengthen your trust in a loving universe, higher power, and let go of that which you cannot control. You may feel the sadness, but don't cling to it. Let it arise and then let it leave. Maintain trust. Allow joy in your life. Good advice.
Thank you. Advice I try to give myself on a regular basis.
It is, again, it is sort of one of the hardest lessons to learn, is that increasing growth doesn't mean that we can increasingly control a situation, but that we increasingly actually let go of trying to control it. And to save the mistakes that are being made, might being made for an extremely important reason.
Right. Sort of testing the evolutionary intelligence of life.
Exactly. And don't rush in to fix it.
Yep.
And it tends to be a little bit of a difference here, kind of boy-girl difference again. Men tend to try to just run in and fix something.
Mm-hmm.
And women are more willing to sort of stay in the process and just be present and let it unfold. Whatever that is. It's certainly a lesson that needs to be learned and is definitely a part of any, you know, mature spiritual intelligence.
Yes, and this skill 20 has very strong Taoist connections. So for people who like reading anything related to Taoism, it can really help sort of think in that way, sort of going with the flow of life.
Right. And the major principle of Taoism, well, there are three. One is, of course, the Tao, the ultimate flow, ultimate reality. And one is T-E, which means virtue, basically. And it's actually the virtue that you get from being in touch with the Tao. And the third principle is Wu-Wei, which is how you get in touch with the Tao. And it means non-action.
It does nothing but leaves nothing undone.
Well, exactly. And sometimes, because it can be very paradoxical, it's called Wei Wu-Wei. Action that's non-interfering, or action that isn't action. The Taoist approach really is a great approach at learning to go with the flow and let go of self-contraction, let go of control, let go of always being right.
Yeah, and it flows nicely into skill 21 as well, in terms of being aligned with the natural timing and the ebbs and flows of life.
Exactly, and under that you say, for example, you can sometimes feel when things are right, when you should act versus when you should wait. And there are, of course, degrees of being aligned with natural timing, but it's something that you can sort of actually feel when you're in harmony with the way things are arising, and there's a spontaneous attunement with what's arising, and you can sort of feel it like a pitchfork, you know, is being struck and resonates.
Yes, using your body as a way of tuning into that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that skill 21 brings us to the end of spiritual intelligence as one of the multiple intelligences that human beings have. And I really want to thank you for giving us all this time and letting me go through this in a fairly detailed way. hopefully people will have a sense of what this is now and will look for offerings that you make through Integral Life, and they can actually put into action spiritual intelligence.
Yes, we're offering a really good discount on taking the assessment and getting an hour of coaching with one of the coaches I've trained in this tool. And the coaching conversation just adds so much to the report that I've become very reluctant to release reports without the coaching session.
Yeah, I bet. And with all of these particular questions being put in play, and therefore all the particular dimensions that they address being activated to some degree, it's got to be a juicy conversation.
Yeah, and the coaches I work with say they go deeper, faster with this tool than with anything else they've ever used.
Right. So, you know, all of the things that I, you know, understand about spirituality, I would certainly agree that's, you know, a very possible, very likely occurrence. So congratulations on that.
Ken, you know, your integral map has been such a gift to me, and the gift of your time to look at this is just priceless. So thank you.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Cindy, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
I'll hope to be in Denver before too long.
Awesome. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.